So basically what they're doing there is taking credit for 6 of the dead Panthers that are not attributable to police causes at the time. A body count, and that's the indicator of a successful operation. So pseudo gangs and the exacerbation of intergroup tensions, and there's a number of other examples of a similar sort that I could run down. That's the next level. Beyond that, you involve the friendly local police departments for pretext arrest. Philadelphia, 1967, you got a very long report after a summer's repression of the Revolutionary Action Movement that said basically we've had the local police work in cooperation with the local police to have them arrest these guys time after time after time on any pretext. We're not looking for convictions. We're looking for arrests. If we can force them into an arrest situation, then we're tying them up in jail until they can make bail. When they make bail, they're having to expend resources they would use for other activities and put themselves back in the street. And guess what? When they walk out the front door of the police station, we arrest them again for spitting on the sidewalk and put them right back in the cell. We've had situations where after about 6 or 7 rounds of this, we've got veteran organizers who are laying on the floor in their living rooms and they're being arrested for the 9th time, crying and kicking the floor. They're so frustrated as they're being hauled away again. We got a guy who got, we got his parole revoked for possession of a deadly weapon. Turns out to be a 3/4-inch blade penknife. This is pretext stuff. It has nothing to do with law enforcement. It has everything to do with neutralizing people they've identified as being, quote, key activists. If that's not sufficient, if you got good legal counsel, if you can mount the bail, if your organization is functioning properly, they go into things that are more extravagant, which is bringing about essentially false imprisonments, which is fabrication of evidence and so forth in order to obtain the conviction and sentencing of targeted activists. Geronimo Pratt is a key case of that. Garuba Bin Wahad is a key case of that. Rice and Poindexter, key cases of that. Leonard Peltier is a key case of that. You can keep on running them down. And interestingly enough, the more obviously innocent you are, the better they like it. So you keep trying to prove that, say, Leonard Peltier is innocent. Demonstrate that to people. They want that demonstrated, because it demonstrates the arbitrariness of their ability to visit consequences upon you of an unacceptable fashion, something you will not to incur, want to incur as a consequence to yourself. But they can do it despite the fact that you're glaringly innocent. They can put you in prison for the rest of your life. That sends the requisite message. I guess the concomitant of that is the extent to which we could get people like Peltier out, Mumia off death row, and so forth. Sends a reverse message back to them. But the horsepower to get that done hasn't really been forthcoming, by and large. Finally, when all else fails, as it did with Fred Hampton, they kill you. They usually use surrogates to do it. They usually use surrogates to do it, but probably not always. Hampton is the classic case. I've already talked about Hampton. There was Mark Clark, who was also killed in the apartment with him. We should talk about that. But beyond that, you got something into, we'll bring it up to 1990. The guy who ran the cartoon campaign, United Slaves Black Panther Party, was a junior agent by the name of Richard Wallace Held. Richard Wallace Held is the son of Richard G. Held. Richard G. Held is the architect of COINTELPRO I quoted with regard to neutralization a while ago. This is a family business. Father taught the son. The son excelled from the day he hit the ground with the FBI. He was running the counterintelligence section, the Black Panther desk in Los Angeles, almost from the moment he got a field assignment with the FBI. Richard Wallace Held is the guy who put out the phony information on Jean Seberg that led to her miscarriage and ultimate suicide to neutralize Friends of the Panthers. Richard Held is the guy who fabricated the evidence to put Geronimo Pratt in prison for 27 years. Richard Held is the guy they brought in as a specialist on the Resmers investigation to bring about the false conviction of Leonard Peltier. Richard G. Held was ultimately rewarded at a very young age for an FBI agent with being named the special agent in charge of the San Francisco office of the FBI, in which capacity he presided over the car bombing of Daryl Cherney and Judy Berry. This is a professional occupation, a neutralizing political activist. Now, it finally started to come out a bit on the Barry Cheney end of things, at which point he took an early retirement. Anybody out there got a Visa card? Come on, fess up. I know you're anarchists, but somebody out there has a Visa card. Yeah. Okay, you should feel very comforted because Dick Hill took an early retirement as a SAC San Francisco. He was being groomed to be an associate director of the FBI by the time he was 55 years of age, which is astronomically young. That's successful. Okay, he's very much rewarded for the sorts of stuff I'm talking about. But since it started to come out, and that would look bad for the Bureau, they put him on early retirement. He now ensures the fact that you can use your Visa card, okay, free from worry that frauds will take your number, okay, and use it for purposes of their own. He's head of security for the Visa Corporation these days. And that's one final thing I want to say in terms of technique before I tie this up, an overlong talk it was at that, and get into some filling of the holes, is that you can't just look to the roster of agent personnel. Dick Held has access to all the information on how you spend your money if you travel on Visa. And that includes your whereabouts, your locations, how you travel, when you travel, probably why you travel, your spending patterns. That's critical information, intelligence sense, and it's handed over directly to the FBI. It's fed right in a list of target activists. And Hoover worked this out years and years and years ago. In 1924, when the Congress of the United States exercised its authority because the FBI had been aimed at them as it was during the Watergate era, okay, it was doing things to the good senators and representatives over there, and so they put a clamp on it, said, you can't engage in political investigative activity anymore. And he said, yeah, I agree, that's fine. I want to be out of the political repression business once and for all. You make me director, I will keep it that way. And then he began to take his top aides and assign them, basically set them up for jobs running industrial security operations for major manufacturing concerns. So they were doing labor espionage as private parties and feeding the information that the FBI itself technically wasn't gathering right into the filing system of the FBI. And they've been doing this now for 100 years. You look out there to Wackenhut. Wackenhut is next FBI agent. You look at the roster of Pinkerton personnel, those are ex-FBI agents. You look at who's running security for Litton or ITT or any of these major corporations, these are FBI personnel. They get groomed, they get trained, they get their relationships, they get their basically set of affiliations set up, they get their priorities straight, and they're farmed out in the private sector to do the sorts of operational things in terms of surveillance, monitoring, and such that the FBI itself either doesn't have the manpower to do or for some reason doesn't want to be caught doing, but they get the information that way. So you got this nationwide net of political police out there, and it's been in existence for the better part of a century. We don't have to worry about what will happen if America becomes a police state. I've been hearing that all of my life. My God, if this keeps it up, we're going to be in a police state. Well, how many ups does it have to keep before we actually are in the police state? Is there some place you can look over your shoulder anywhere in the continental United States, and I don't care whether it's Pies, North Dakota, or DuPont Circle, where you're not likely to see a cop? Is there any place you can go that is not the ubiquitous presence of the overt symbology of the police? Never mind the covert operatives, the plainclothes people that permeate society, the monitoring capacities and all the rest of that. Is there anything that you can do in your daily life that is not attached to a rule or regulation at this point? Tell me something. Anything that you can do. And I'm not asking, do you have the power to break the regulations, to break the law? You do, obviously, but that doesn't mean there's not a regulation or a law pertaining to it. And if you, as I do, define social freedom in terms of relative absence of regulation, you are in the least free society on the planet. Get used to it. The question is not what to do to prevent it. The question is what to do now it's done. Do you really?
Yeah.
He thinks he gets the most freedom he can. Try setting your can out in the middle of the street and see what happens to you. There's regulations where you're allowed to do that, so even that's not free. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll take other suggestions. What you think you're doing that you're free to do. Somebody said something about breathing air. I've got three letters that I'll say to you, and that's EPA.
Are you urging us to get out? I mean, what are you?
Get out of what? Where are you going to go?
So what?
Now
we're scared to death.
You're scared to death? Fear can be a good motivator. All right. I want you scared to death because that's a reality and a habitual practice in this society. And it doesn't matter whether you're Ozzie and Harriet living in suburbia or some paleo conservative out there in the fringes of the Freeman in Montana, or you fancy yourself a progressive, reality gets blinked because we have a politics of the comfort zone that has pertained by and large to the entire trajectory of opposition in this country. And we need to get out of it. You got to understand what the reality is before you can conceive of effective means of countering it. So call things by their right names. Then you can call solutions by their right names and stop playing a game of let's pretend. And let's pretend is when we say, you know, we've got to curtail these. We've got to make these cosmetic changes. We've got to have community control over the police. We've got to make the FBI accountable to some discernible set of guidelines and so forth in order to prevent there being a police state. Hey, it's way late for that. Maybe that would have worked in, say, 1924.
Actually, it wouldn't have worked in 1924. And actually, 1924, it was against the law to tie your alligator to a fire hydrant in Detroit.
It was against the law in Detroit to tie your alligator to a fire hydrant.
It was also against the law in the 40s to eat peanuts in church while you were in Atlanta, Georgia.
If I'd known this, I'd have given up hope long ago. I thought at least I could park my alligator where I wanted. But I guess not. Yeah. Yeah, and this stuff will actually be enforced.
Minnesota's against the law to walk around with an ice cream cone in your pocket.
Yeah.
Other people, what do you recommend we do? And what do you think about the future of this?
I don't have an answer per se. Clearly not one that's going to work for everybody. I don't even understand a lot of the politics of the groups that are involved in the room. You're going to have to use the information in order to forge a politic that works for you. The way that I've approached it and the way that I know some other people approaching it seems one of the more viable strategies is the notion of affinity groups, the notion of dealing with people you have history with already, who you will be in proximity with, whose history you're going to continue to know, because people get changed. People do change, but people get changed as well. And if they're going to get changed, it'll be a potential threat to me. I need to know about it. It's a kind of a paranoid, so it's a term that gets used, approach to things in a certain way. But on the other hand, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you. When you're actually going to engage in an action of some sort, I mean, I sort of made that point to a guy yesterday who said, why don't we infiltrate the FBI and stuff? It's, you know, well, now he says, I guess since I said that, I probably can't do it. I said, now that you said it in a public place, probably nobody else can either. You know, you want to be thinking as if somebody was probably monitoring what you're saying. Okay, you make yourself a target for elimination if they take you seriously. You want to talk about things on the one hand, but not divulge what you're tangibly going to do. These kinds of things, which are precautionary. We've got big mouths. I got a really big mouth myself. I'm 55 years old. I'm probably not going to be engaged in the in-game move of this stuff anyway. So I'm trying to pass along what it is I picked up along the road to people who are younger than me, can put the information to work in ways that I was too dumb or uninformed to do in the first place. So there's that aspect of it as well. But I think the thing that has to be done primarily in terms of forging a viable politic is to dismantle this whole veneer of naivete. We carry a veneer, an image, an impression of whatever of American innocence that is almost as nauseating as that held by the middle class. We can't believe they do this stuff. And every time they do, we think it's like inventing the wheel. Wow, they're infiltrating us. No shit.
Mark,
yes.
Those of us doing the next workshop on what you can do would very much like a bright little glimmer ray of light here so that folks don't all be bummed out and become like gardeners in New Hampshire.
Oh.
Well,
let me lay out a deterrent in that gardening in New Hampshire business then. You know, use a bludgeon rather than an incentive. Okay, depends on what you're growing. See how they work. What is happening here?
Could have been something you said.
Okay, a bright side, and that's a good point, Chip. You need something to work with. It's not that I'm really having a hard time thinking up something that might be of a positive kind. It's just that I'm laughing at how grim this stuff gets and how much got left out. But the upside of it is there is a certain continuity between the last generation of struggle and what it was that was done to us and what we learned as a result of that and making available the information, the operational techniques and so forth so that they can be understood before you're in the same situation that the Black Panther Party was. Before you're in the same situation of internal confusion that the Students for a Democratic Society was. Before they can do to you what they did to the Berrigans and so forth, you have the opportunity to use those precedents and those understandings for education to transform consciousness so that it won't resonate as being so plausible that a bunch of Catholic priests and nuns are going to run down into the tunnel system of Washington, D.C. and blow up the whole complex in order to take out Henry Kissinger. I mean, it's utterly preposterous, but it seemed plausible, and it seemed plausible because nobody could foresee it coming. Now you can. Now you can mount a cogent defense against these show trial things like what happened with the Panther 21. I mean, there was the aerosol can routine there, too. These guys, they had them with a bunch of hairspray cans. Okay, the hairspray cans were going to be used as the container devices for the making of a whole multiplicity of bombs using 1 ounce of black powder to take out the Bronx Botanical Gardens. Now, there's a strategic target. Macy's department stores and half the police stations in the borough of Brooklyn and Bronx. Utterly implausible on its face, but no one was making the argument until after the fact, and they were all up in conspiracy charges. We have the capacity now to respond in ways that were not possible in the 1960s, because frankly, in the 1960s, we didn't know a damn thing about the Palmer Raids. We were making jokes about the CP, but we didn't really understand at the time. It was a federal program. That was not known. COINTELPRO did not become known until 1971. Now we know. And on the basis of knowledge, we can collectively sometimes it's hard to tell the anarchists from the FBI personnel. But to be equipped in that way is to be able to avoid some of that catastrophe. Probably not all of it. There is not a given technique or set of principles that you can apply that will prevent any and all of us from being effective. But you can defend yourself much more adequately in understanding the historical precedent of it, the purposes of it, how it functions, and how it's likely to come at you than if you're getting caught blindsided the way we did. And a little self-criticism on that. The information was available on the Palmer raids and stuff. We were the new left. So we had very little time and energy available in our self-important existences to look at the experience of the old left. Do not repeat that error either.
Can you say that again?
We were the new left. Okay, all of us, everybody I was talking about in the 60s comes under the rubric of the new left. And the new left was so self-absorbed, self-indulgent, self-preoccupied, self-aggrandizing, we didn't have time and energy to look at what it was that had been the experience of the old left. And if we had, we could have avoided some of this stuff too. But we didn't know about the Palmer Raids because we didn't bother with it. That was what was happening then with those guys, with those archaic notions. We got a whole new politic. Well, we didn't have a new politic. Ultimately, the new left ended up with a regurgitation of everything that was crystallized in the old left. But it took us about 10 years of being obliterated to arrive at that point. And we could have come out with a much more constructive outcome simply by learning what it was that had happened in the preceding generation, two generations. Now, you got that generation standing here talking to you. I'm not retired. But I'm coming out of that experience. And that's the reason I'm talking about this grim stuff. It's not that there's no hope. See, I'm still talking. There's a lot of dead people in my background. There's a lot of people in prison or previously in prison. There's been a lot of things that were derailed in my life. But I'm still here and I'm still at it. And you can draw something from that too. They have not ultimately been effective. They did not ultimately accomplish what they set out to do. Chip Belay is another one. He's been at it since before I was, probably. There's other people who were speaking in here yesterday. We cannot tell you what to do. All we can do is tell you what was done. And you can draw the logical conclusions, or illogical if that's what you want to do, from those. But pay attention to them because it affects you. And that was implicit in the comment that was made yesterday about, hey, they're infiltrating us at these incredible levels. It doesn't have to be a hot news flash. In the experience of other organizations, other groups, other movements, in terms of dealing with that and what was done to them, gives you a predictive power that was absent from us. The stuff about the liberal, the allegation that was made about the liberals turning in the more radical member of the environmental movement to the cops. There's a lesson to be learned from that because they will draw people into that. Both sides. It's not like that's the first time that's ever happened. There's actually matters of principle to be considered in that connection, but there's also matters of objective and technique in the part of the state that need to be analyzed. And there's historical precedent and experience and conclusions to be drawn that can be brought to bear on that, but you have to actually look at it. You cannot reinvent the wheel every 15 minutes in order to get any further along the line than we got. You'll end up in the same position that we did 20 years ago, and that is basically breaking traction, spinning your wheels, and going nowhere at all. Except maybe to jail. Except maybe into middle class existence. Oh, better jail, huh? Yeah.